I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. Joining me today are two other priests of the diocese, Father Garrett Burns.
What's up?
And Father Drew Hoffman.
Hello.
Today we are located in the St. Andrew studio.
Let's go!
Figured we haven't used any of our actual name to saints, so figured we should start that.
We talked about St. Chad, King of the Bros, a few weeks ago, and this cathedral in Birmingham.
Obviously, there's going to be a studio named after him. I mean, how could you not? After I'm surprised more studios aren't already named after St. Chad, but it's coming. It's coming.
What's Andrew mean in Greek?
Womanly, I think. Is that's that right? Not,
well, that would be fine. Futurist female, but it means manly.
Oh, that's right.
Manly. Have you ever been to like any of the relics of St. Andrew anywhere? Apparently, he's kind of split up, is my understanding.
Isn't his head a super big deal? Wasn't there a lot of tension over his head and things like that? Like JP2 maybe gave it back?
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been to his head.
No, where?
So it's in Amalfi in Italy.
Oh.
So it had apparently been in Rome for a while and in one of those weird Catholic sort of things. Yeah. The Rome just like, yeah, you guys, you earned this head years ago in the Crusades. Here you go. Have it back. And so he sent the head back. So if you go to the cathedral in Amalfi, which I got to say mass there as a young priest, they've got the head of St. Andrew. So I was thinking, I've been to St. Andrew and I've been to St. James. That would be like a really cool sort of lifelong Catholic pilgrimage. Hit all the apostles or try and hit as many apostles as you could to say
at least
mass
a
at.
Piece of their
body. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because they're kind of spread around.
What if we created like out of the relics of the apostles, like a super saint. Like I want the head of Andrew and I want the arm of Francis Xavier and I want the toes of Chad and...
This is like the Optimus Prime of saints united.
That'd be kind of cool.
That would be cool. Or we could do like a About 4 O'Clock themed, what do you call it? A pilgrimage. Like, it seems like all of these things, all these podcasts have their go on the pilgrimage podcast, and it could be to all the different apostles.
That's a good plan.
So I think we can bankroll that from all of our sponsorships.
And send in your non-refundable deposit this week. Have St. Paul Catholic Student Center in the memo. That's who it should be written out to. That should be written out to, and we'll work out the rest of the details.
We'll entrust that to
you. Yeah, we'll work out the rest of the details later.
You just report back to what comes in.
Yeah.
Now, as everyone knows, Andrew was a fisherman. All the other apostles had different jobs before Jesus called them. And so I thought we'd spend a few moments just kind of talking about what were our different jobs before the Lord invited us to step into seminary. So I can remember, so Father Drew, I know for a while you worked at the meat market at Dillon's. Is that right?
Prima la carne.
What? I imagine you weren't like a full-on butcher. But
No! Oh my gosh, no!
I had cleaning boy. It was pretty
I
much.
Was the cleaning boy. That's what I would do. Is so I got the job right after football season in my senior year, and I wasn't playing basketball and I wasn't going to run track, and so I just needed a full kind of as many hours as I could get before I went to college, and so I would just go right after school, so like 4 o'clock, and
about 4 o'clock.
Wow.
Dang. That's
the
awesome.
Seminarians do that to me all the time. Like anytime I say, well, this will start at 4 o'clock. Is it about 4 o'clock, Father? I'm like, and I still don't get it. Like every time I'm really confused when they ask the question.
It was about 4 o'clock and then I would just clean. And so they would just leave the meat marketplace as messy as you could imagine. I mean, they've been working all day. They've been grounding beef and butchering stuff and cutting stuff and all this. And so then I would go up and it would take me hours to clean everything down. And obviously there's pretty strict sanitary guidelines and things like that. And so I'm doing that. But then I would have to, if they needed more, I'd have to cut some stuff up. I'd have to ground some beef. I saw some things I never want to see again.
Yeah.
And then I
saw how the sausage gets made.
Exactly. Like I'm standing there like as the sausage is coming out and I'm like, there's a very specific way you have to move the container to get it to look as pretty as it does.
Oh yeah. It's pretty looking.
And then in the summer I would come in super early. I'd put out all the deals. And I was so bad at it that they stopped that doing that. And they just sent me to more cleaning. So that was my job when I was in high school and then afterward and then I went to KU.
Is that the only job you had before seminary?
No, I would do like nannying's not the right word, but there was some kids in my brother's class that needed rides and driving around and things like that. And so I would do that when I was a little bit older.
A manly, an Andrew type job, a manly job.
And then when
you got paid to do that, just to drive them around?
Yeah, Chad, people need friends.
We'll pay tons of money
and to get
friends.
Places.
I don't think that qualifies as friendship when you're being paid to give a service to drive someone somewhere.
I once complained about it one time. I was like, somebody wanted to go somewhere, and it was when I wanted to do something else. I was complaining to my mom about it. She's like, boy, you don't know how jobs work, dude. And then, so I did that. And then I worked in KU's child. What's the word I'm looking for?
Child,
daycare.
Yeah.
I worked in KU's daycare my sophomore year at KU.
Nice.
And was the only, I think it was the only guy who worked as a young, I mean, there's plenty of, but the only like college man that was there. So help with their lunches and help them. You know, they had nap time and then they had recess time and then they, and these are little kids. I really liked it. I mean, it was a very fun.
They or you all had nap time.
Well, that was the thing. Once they all fell asleep, you kind of got to read and hang out and things like that. Just make sure everybody was okay. And yeah, it was great.
How about you, Gare? What were your jobs before
My
seminary?
First job was pizza boy, Papa John's.
Mm.
Just making pizzas.
I've heard like many people that when they work at the restaurants, then they can't eat that food anymore. Can you still eat Papa John's? Did that ever affect you?
But for a couple years, because I didn't for a couple years, because yeah, we'd have so many and we'd make a fake carry out order and like some guy ordered the exact pizza I want and he didn't show up tonight to pick it up. So,
wah, wah. Wah, wah.
But yeah, so I did that for a year and I remember I'd been there a year and so I go into the manager, I'm like 16, 17 years old. I'm all got my points lined out and I want a raise to like $5.75.
Man, you are an accountant,
yeah,
son. I mean,
yeah.
Wow.
But I just remember that because now I'm like minimum wage is whatever it is. And I'm like, I couldn't even, they said, no, we're not going to raise you to $5.75. So I left and just did a lot of rest of time in high school, did a lot of mowing lawns and, one summer painted houses and stuff with some buddies, which is a lot of fun. And then at KU, I was a math teacher or tutor. Like I taught Monday, Wednesday, Friday, just freshman, and then helped out in the tutoring room. So I liked that. It was on campus. I graded some of the KU basketball players' math tests.
Ooh.
They were not great. They were not great.
Can you legally say that?
I think I didn't give a name.
Yeah, that's right.
So in general,
enough time has passed.
Yeah. I would guess almost all of the KU basketball players were not good, but hey, I'm not saying names.
We were at KU and one of the KU basketball players, Elijah Johnson, walked in to a class on March 1st for the first time.
Ooh.
And he had not been in that class before. And Thomas Robinson, who was first team All-American, huge guy, sits in the front row all time, every class. And he stood up and he goes, boy, you are not in this class. And Elijah's like, yeah, I am. And it's the only day he showed up to class. Right here.
Holy cow.
Good high level stuff.
Nice.
For
nice.
You. Are we talking high school jobs or post high school?
I'm just saying before seminary.
Okay. So what were your high school jobs? And then did you have jobs after?
I only ever had one job through high school and even the beginning of college. Is I worked at the Spiritual Life Center, our local retreat center, as a groundskeeper maintenance person. So I started working there when I was 15. For a kid that age, it was a fantastic job. My cousins had worked there before me. And so as each successive cousin gave up the job to move on to something else, he got the next cousin the job. And so Father Joe Guile hired me for my very first job, sight unseen. I'm 15 years old and calling, can I come work in Mark's spot? Yeah, go ahead. So it was awesome because 40 hours a week, got to be outside mowing, planting trees, watering. They fed me good lunches, which is cool. I don't know if this was supposed to work or not, but I never had to clock out for mass. So like I'd work through the morning and go to mass at 11 o'clock and that was paid. So 11 to 11:30, there are all these old blue haired ladies would be coming to the daily mass and I would be like in a sleeveless torn shirt and shorts and just gross as all get out sitting in the back of the chapel there. Father Guile encouraged me to like, well, you know, you're watering all these trees. Why don't you just take a book with you? We've got a library up there. So that's like when I first started reading some of the saints' lives is I'd go up, I'd pull off a biography, I'd drive the tractor around, put the hose on, read about a half page, move the hose to the next one. Because you're so far out, there's not a lot of other work you can do when you're pulling a big tank of water around with these trees. So it was a fantastic job. I'd work there all summer. I'd work there Saturdays through the school year, go in, paint, and do all of that. I loved it. I was probably there 3-4 years.
Would you say that helped you graduate?
Graduate? Was from that, high school?
Yeah.
Are they concerned that you didn't have a high school diploma?
You know, it never got brought up. It never got brought up. Oddly enough, they did not ask that question. Well, I didn't have to do an interview. Maybe if I went in for an actual interview, then it would have come
tough
up.
Tough question.
So if you've got to apply for any other jobs, we do have something for you. Chad, we have Father Chad's Bishop Carroll Catholic High School diploma here. If you remember from previous podcasts, I'll let Father Garrett pass that to Father Chad.
I felt like I was being set up here with that question.
You remember from a previous podcast that Father Chad never picked up his diploma. He graduated 20 years ago.
This is legit. This is the real thing.
This is the real thing. 20 years ago, he never picked it up. And he made a big scene about not having his high school diploma. And so some friends of the pod who will remain nameless coordinated this and asked us to pass this on to you.
Wow. Now I legitimately have to hang this up somewhere. I don't know.
It looks good, right?
It does. This looks very, so this is the real thing. That's Bob Vobral and Leticia Nielsen's signature on there. It looks like it's got some water damage or food marks or something on it, but this is legit. Has satisfactorily completed the course of studies prescribed for graduation from this school and by the State Department of Education for the state of Kansas, and is therefore entitled to this diploma given at Wichita, Kansas, this month of May 2002.
Holy hit that applause cow. Button over there.
Man. Ooh, yeah, applause. Yeah. I don't remember.
That's actually so much better.
That was a genuine trying to guess which button it was.
How do you feel right now?
Man, I feel educated.
For those who obviously you can't see, Father Chad is crying.
He's weeping.
I'd like to thank all the people that made this possible. For my sophomore English teacher in believing in me when no one else did, and all of the friends who kept me going to this momentous occasion.
We made it.
Does Miss Nielsen even know this is taking place? Is she a friend of the pod?
I'm not commenting on
no names.
Those who were responsible will comment and reach out. There'll probably be some people who reach out who say that it was them.
I would like to know who was behind that. I'm not going to tell you. I'm not sure that it's legal for anyone to go pick this up.
That's what I didn't understand. I'll be honest, when this was reached out, this came to me, I had no idea how that this all played out. I didn't ask questions. It was just on my desk one day when I got home.
That is funny.
I think it probably would not have been legal. We passed the, what do you call it?
Statute of limitations. It has been 20 years. After 20 years, man.
20 years, I think you're allowed to do what you want with a high school diploma.
Again, there are tears running down Chad's eyes. Man. He got this little lump in his throat.
I have no diplomas hanging, but this is going to go up somewhere.
Honestly, it looks, like I said, it looks great. I don't have any clue where my Bishop Carroll diploma is.
It does look good.
But it looks good.
I will do, anybody out there who hasn't picked up your Bishop Carroll diploma, it's a good diploma. I go from being one of you to highly recommending you go and pick it up and proudly display it. This is just in time. My 20th class reunion is coming up. So maybe, you know, I'll just walk around carrying that around in case anyone forgot that I was in the class and I can prove my...
I am an actual graduate. Yeah.
That is...
Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you. And thank you, whoever the mysterious people are. So when you say names will not be named, you don't even know.
Oh, I do know.
Okay, you do know. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I am genuinely curious about that. Well, maybe the reason I never had to show a diploma is I've never interviewed for a job except for one time in my life. I don't know if you guys had to do, the only time I ever interviewed for a job was kind of a similar experience to yours, Drew, was when I was at K-State. So I go to K-State, need money, hard to find a job in a college town, and some graduate students wanted someone to babysit their kid. So it was advertised in the paper, so I showed up to it, and they were letting the kid do the interviews. That's the only interview I've ever done for a
job.
How old
was the kid?
And nailed it.
How old was the kid?
8, 9, 10 years old.
That's some next level graduate right? professors exactly. Like, we'll really try this out.
We'll
on
let him the
social experiment.
I think I was the only guy, again, probably that applied for it, but I knew how to play with Legos. I knew how to sword fight. Those were the primary questions in there. And yeah, it wasn't even a question of who got the job. So one and a perfect score for interviews. I don't remember the kid's name. He did not, ask for references or diplomas. So
high school graduate Chad Arnold.
The other jobs I had while it was K-State, I started the rickshaw business, which was not successful. I was at K-State, so I don't know if that counts as a job. I didn't actually make my money back until a few years later. But mostly K-State to get money, I did product testing. Did you guys ever do any of that in college?
No.
I would go to like the psychological tests or things like that where they do. And yeah, kind of like that, but it wasn't a sleep study, but it would be like trying to see how I would react to certain stimuli of like on TV and things like that. So they could do testing of things like that. But is this what you're talking about?
Well, that sounds better than some of the things I did.
It was. It wasn't bad at all.
Like we had to taste pork patties and they were awful, but it was like, here's $20. Come and sit for an hour and taste these pork patties and rate their mushroominess flavor on it. Did a toothpaste study where like my tooth will probably fall out when I'm 50 years old because they just gave me this random toothpaste for a month. I think that one paid 30.
Hey.
The biggest one I got was a sleep study. So they signed us up. It was 5 nights in a row. You had to go into a climate controlled chamber with 4 other people. You had to put on like long underwear. They strapped sensors to your toes. And every night they were reducing the temperature in the room by like 10 degrees until like the last night it was, I don't know, 10, 15 degrees below the cold resistance of the sleeping bags. But it paid $500. And so you'd go up to this lab. They'd give you the clothes to put on, tape sensors to your toes and go in. And they told us they would be monitoring our temperature. And if it got too low, they would pull us out of the study, or if we got too uncomfortable, we could leave the study. But if you did that, you wouldn't get paid the full amount. And I needed the money. So like, I remember that last night, it was so freaking cold in that room. Like I'd sleep for about 20, 30 minutes and wake up just shivering, but I'd reach down and rub blood through my feet because I was afraid that my body temperature would get low enough that they would pull me out of the study. So I just remember every hour waking up to massage my feet to make sure that the blood was keeping things warm. But I made it through the night and paid $500. And that was like the biggest windfall of my freshman college year of money. I felt loaded after that.
Wow.
I'd watch the papers for any sort of anything that paid to use me as a guinea pig at that stage in life. I was all for. Now, none of these jobs were going to make us rich, obviously, except for the sleep study. If I did that every week, $500 a week, I could live off that. None of these jobs were also very hard to walk away from. I don't think any of us had any qualms about leaving this sort of work. Now, there were other guys in seminary that I knew, and you guys probably knew in theology, that had like real professional jobs, had actually some pretty impressive resumes, and it would have been more difficult to walk away from. I remember we had a couple guys who were astrophysicists. We had a guy that was an MLB umpire. We had a guy that was a professional soccer player, a guy that ran his own air conditioning business. I mean, like real, they were doing more important things than testing pork patties. It was a little bit difficult perhaps for them to walk away. And I think everyone, if the Lord is calling them to the priesthood, everyone is going to have to step away from something, whether that's work or something else. And so I want to try something a little bit different in the podcast today, something we haven't really done before, kind of a, shall we say, Lectio Divina, a spiritual reading. So we're going to read a passage from the Gospel of Matthew, and we've all kind of prayed about this a little bit before. And so we're just going to kind of discuss what's going on there. So our passage for today is Matthew chapter 19, verses 16 through 22. It is the story of the rich young man. And it goes, "And behold, one came up to him, saying, 'Teacher, what good deed must I do to have eternal life?' And he said to him, 'Why do you ask me about what is good? One there is who is good. If you would enter life, keep the commandments.' He said to him, 'Which?' And Jesus said, 'You shall not kill. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. Honor your father and mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself.' The young man said to him, 'All these I have observed. What do I still lack?' Jesus said to him, 'If you would be perfect, go, sell what you possess and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come, follow me.' When the young man heard this, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions." I chose this verse because a number of years ago, Drew and I actually had several conversations about this particular verse and how it kind of, while you were still at K-State, how it applied to the young men that were discerning that we saw. Because I know that as I've prayed with this over the years, I've seen that in a lot of the college students. They are the rich young man, not in the sense that they were financially rich, like we were talking about. They're all broke and taking dumb jobs, anything like that. But they are rich in other things in life that are hard to walk away from. You know, I hang out at the St. Isidore Center or the St. Lawrence Center or some of the other campus centers in the state, and they've got good friends there. They're praying well. They're enjoying life. They're having good classes. They have all of these riches around them, and the Lord is loving them in the midst of this, and they're doing good things. It's not like they're squandering their life or they're wasting away or making terrible decisions. But yet the Lord is calling them to something more. And you can tell, like the rich young man in this passage, there is a hesitancy to follow that because they have many possessions. They have many good things in their college situation. So that's one of the things when I'm going around college campuses, I pray with that verse a lot. And I feel like I see that lived out throughout the state at different colleges. So that's one of the things that first comes to mind when I pray with that passage. I don't know where you guys, your prayer has led you.
Yeah, I think I was just initially drawn to his question after, you know, saying you need to follow the commands and these I've done. What do I still lack? One, that's just not like, we don't really talk like that. Like I rarely say, what do I lack? So I think even just to pose that question to the Lord was a good exercise for me. And even in, yeah, vocational discernment, it's like what you're saying of maybe everything is good at wherever I'm at my job, at my college campus center, whatever, but to think in a different way of even not just am I doing things wrong, but is there this fullness? Is this their specific calling to come follow me, as Jesus says in this gospel, that he wants to bring me into? And that takes some trust and surrender to like give over to that and say, okay, I want to seek after that fullness. And that's going to require some of the sacrifice of this stuff that seems good and comfortable right now. But just to think in terms of that, rather than just, am I doing good? Am I doing bad? Versus, is there some fullness that I still lack that Jesus wants to share with me?
Yeah, I think right along those lines, even the language that he uses when he asks this question makes me really uncomfortable. What good must I do to gain eternal life? These verbs that he has this image, and it's a fine image, he thinks, and in a certain sense it's better than nothing, of okay, I've got this activity that I can do, these things that I can do to go get eternal life, and if I only check enough boxes then I'll get eternal life. And he's realizing that hasn't worked. And so what's the solution of following, which is a verb, but one that he'll have very little control over in the future? And he doesn't know necessarily what that will. The Lord's going to ask him to come, and I'm not going to give you all the answers quite yet. And you're going to have to believe that eternal life, that vision I have for you, and that plan is going to be somewhere else kind of in the future. He wants to gain it and do it right now and have control over it. And as soon as something is presented that he doesn't have control over it, he gets nervous. And that's just my experience a lot with young men discerning, with college kids in general, in the world in general, this kind of faith and works comparison. And so I think that's a lot of that here, and finding that balance and recognizing where I'm called to activity and where I can never earn the love of the Lord. How do those things kind of balance out is one of the things that pops up here in my prayer.
I think Mark's translation of it kind of partners well with that. In Mark's gospel, he has the line in between there after he asks, you know, what must I do to gain eternal life? And in Mark's gospel, it says, Jesus looked upon him and loved him. And so the fact that, okay, Jesus is going to offer this other thing, he already loves him. You know, when he's inviting him to follow him, his love is not dependent upon him doing that. It's not dependent on what he's going to do. Jesus already loves him. He's calling him to something more. And in fact, what he's inviting him to is a relationship with Jesus. Come follow me. Be with me. But he already loves him. Even, you know, we don't know how the story ends, whether the rich young man follows him or not. It doesn't say. But especially if you look at Mark's gospel, the love is already there, and it's not something to be earned by there. And so what the invitation is, this isn't just to, quote unquote, gain eternal life. This isn't to check more boxes. This isn't to achieve something. Jesus looks upon him and loves him and then invites him to follow me, to be in relationship with me, to be united to me. And I think that one little verse, and he loved him, really kind of brings that out, that it's not about doing A, B, C, D, E, F, which also makes it harder because, okay, the Lord already loves me. he's inviting me to this. It really is a choice he's giving me. He's not saying I have to do this. He's not even saying eternal life depends upon this. He's inviting me to something deeper and better. And he's inviting me because I pushed the question. Jesus didn't seek go and find this young man, pull him on the ground. Hey, you, this guy pushed, Lord, I want to do more. What can I do to more? He was seeking something better. And when he sought something better, the Lord offered him something better, but it wasn't what he was expecting. And that kind of rattles him.
That word lack is a great word. It's a great word because he's experiencing this and we've experienced it in our own hearts and the people that we've worked with. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm checking all these boxes in a good sense. And even maybe I have a successful family or I have a successful job or like you're talking, I'm an MLB umpire or I'm going to mass every day and things like that. But something's up. Something's up. There is a lack somewhere. And my experience of the human condition and of my own heart is this really strange combination of I know there's a lack, I'm presented with the fulfillment of that lack, and I don't take it. I'll take something else, even though what would fulfill that lack is presented to me, but it's not what I thought it was going to be, and it's not what I want it to be. One of the things that's been coming up in my prayer a lot my first year at St. Paul, and what I'll talk to students with a lot is, I could be happier. These students could be happier. I could be happier. But it's going to take some of these more uncomfortable follow me moments. But I know every single person who comes in the confessional, every single priest, every single college kid knows they could be happier. There's something in their heart that is lacking. But either they don't know what will fill it, or more likely they do somewhere in their heart, and it'd be pretty hard. Mm-hmm. And it'd make them nervous, and they'd have to lose some control.
It's super practical too. I had a spiritual director one time say, listen to the lack, kind of like what you're saying. And just, you feel that. And like, I could be happier. There could be something more here. What am I going to do with that? And that's actually very practical. Like, I think we've been talking about it on a grand scale or vocationally or something like that. But yeah, just in the day to day, like I think of the Father Timothy Gallagher, he's kind of the discernment of spirits guru. And he would, when he gave us that retreat, he would always go to this one example of just seminary. And at the end of the day, the breviary or the phone, and like, what are you going for? And there's, yeah, for me as a priest, there's times during every day where it's like, I've kind of done everything I need to get done. And so I've kind of like been a good priest. I've done the things I need to do and I've done my prayers, but I have half an hour here. And so I could just waste time on my phone and just watch another stupid YouTube movie, or I could go in and try to seek out somebody that needs something. I could spend a little more time in silence or in spiritual reading. And that choice is there. And sometimes I'm just, yeah, we're slow learners. And so I still just walk away sad. And I'm just like, well, I'll just waste some time doing this. When God is saying, I'm inviting you into more, you got to follow me and trust. Cause it's going to seem like this is more work or it's harder, but I want to lead you into more. So to do that little by little each day builds up those spiritual muscles in discernment of bigger things.
Mm-hmm. Just exactly what I was thinking about with the prayer in our own personal, very practical lives. Prayer is kind of one of the answers here. All right, what do I lack? Yeah, and when I pray, I could be praying more. And you want to be careful with, I could be praying more. It's got to be a specific, like I have these 30, like you said, 30 minutes here. But that is the answer that we say no to a lot, that we walk away sad from a lot. But I could be happier. There is some lack and I've been presented with a solution. But my muscles, I like that, aren't quite strengthened for it yet.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I find myself sometimes at the end of the day thinking along those same lines, because I can fall in that same thing, you know, I've had my list of tasks to do today. And most days I don't get all of them done, but occasionally I get all of them done. I'm like, man, I'm a good priest today. I got all of these things done. And I may have some extra moments, but it's in that moment trying to recall to myself regularly that the Lord is inviting me to be, I use the term in my prayer and in my thought, in my conversation with the Lord, generous. And that can mean a bunch of different things. Rarely does generosity mean doing an email or another task, because there's a temptation sometimes. Okay, I got all my tasks done today. I can get some of the tasks for tomorrow done, and then I'll be in there. I'm like, but I got to step back. And that's not bad, but the Lord has invited me to something more, to be generous. Maybe I'll go and walk the floors and talk to the seminarians and be present to them. Maybe I'll give someone a call that I haven't talked to in a while. Maybe I'll just, you know, it's a nice evening, so I'm going to go out and pray the rosary and have a little bit more meditative walk around the neighborhood. Something in there where the Lord has invited me to step away from the checking of boxes and finishing of tasks, and simply to allow my heart to be generous. I find when I'm able to lean into that, when I'm able to live that, it's better. I don't know how, you know, you go to sleep a little more satisfied, or you feel a connection to the Lord, and you would think having done that enough times, it would become automatic. But like you said, yeah, we're slow learners, and oh yeah, no, bye. Do I be generous, or do I get this task, or do I just go watch TV, or what? But when I am able to live that, I find that the Lord's goodness is always overwhelming. It you know, the Lord's never done outdone in generosity. It's a cliche saying, but it's absolutely true. That's what I, you know, when I see this rich young man, or when I see the rich young men on college campus, I want to encourage them in that thought that go ahead, step away from all those possessions, because the Lord is not going to be outdone in generosity. If you give him those things, he's going to give you something better, something more. And I want to be able to say that with the college students. And it may not be an immediate sense. It's not like, well, I'm going to hand these things over to you, and then tomorrow, well, no, yeah, I've got three times as much stuff now. Well, no, there's going to be, you're going to have to carry the cross maybe for a while, or you're going to have to go through some learning phases, but the Lord is not going to be outdone. He's going to give back, and he's going to give back packed down and overflowing.
One of the blessings I think of this podcast that I've heard people express is people saying, it sounds like you guys love being priests so much, and they love hearing us love being priests. And I hope that comes across from men that were, quote unquote, rich young men, and the things we loved of the world and of our friends and of college and things like that, and are so much happier now, and are so much happier now because of that. And it took maybe some time, but getting to this, but yeah, it worked for those guys, but it's not going to work for me. But I can't think of a time it hasn't worked. I can't put my finger on a person that it hasn't worked for who's really actually followed the Lord and not ended up happier and had those lacks fulfilled.
I think that's true. And I think that's where we will leave off today as a bona fide high school graduate.
That's so funny, man.
That is hilarious. I don't know where I'm going to hang that up, but it will be the one and only diploma that is hanging on my walls somewhere. That's cool. So thank you to whoever made that happen, because I would have never done that on my own. Thanks for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. Father Garrett's got the final word today.
This comes from Erasmo Leva Maricakis. He's a spiritual author. He's a Trappist monk, and he's talking about just the Beatitudes, and he says the best translation he feels is the Spanish translation Bienaventurado, which means well-adventured. So he says, here again, it seems the traditional Spanish translation Bienaventurado has always conveyed this sense. The deepest Christian emotion may well be the boundless, precise, silent joy that wells up at the center of our being every time we realize who it is that calls us, what he is calling us to, and how marvelous the road is that he himself has prepared for us by treading it himself. Only adventuresome hearts are capable of following Jesus intimately.
See you next week.